Blog Talk Radio.
Just jumped over, jumpin'. Yeezy, just jumped over, jumpin'. Yeezy, I feel so accomplished. I done talked a lot of shit, but I just did the numbers. Herzog and Adidas, man, you know they love it. If Nike ain't had Drizzy, man, they wouldn't have nothing. Woo! If Nike ain't had Dossy, man, they wouldn't have nothing. Woo! But I'm all for the family, tell them get your money. Yeezy, they line up for days.
Talk radio. I am your host, Jordan Malley from WIUX 99.1 FM Bloomington, Pure Student Radio, and the Baylitz Radio Network. It's great to be back here. I did a show previously last week with my buddy Brian Benjamin from Illinois State. He was unfortunately not able to join us tonight, but I do have somebody that I am very fond of, and the Blog Talk Radio is very used to hearing. We've got El Presidente Tom Marquez with us. From the Balance Radio Network and the Balance Online. You can hear that from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern weekly on blogtalkradio.com and also Indiana Talks. He's also a part of Breaking Rank and The Hot Corner, which you'll be able to hear weekly, Breaking Rank on Tuesdays at 8 Eastern to 9 Eastern, and The Hot Corner, which will be starting up in the next 2 months, talking all things baseball. So, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I got my hands in just a little bit of everything. It's good to be on your show for the first time. I know you've been on our show numerous times and certainly help us out over there with the Balance team, but it's good to be on your show, the Big and Tall show. I haven't yet figured out which one of you guys are the big and which one of you are the tall, but I can assure you that I'm both.
Well, the show name, we were sitting around talking about the show names. We're trying to figure out something good to describe us and something that's not cliche for sports. And so we figured the Big and Tall was good. My buddy, Brian, he's 6'3", 6'4", huge soccer player, plays at Illinois State. And so I'm the short, stubbier type. So I figured I'd go with the big. So the Big and Tall, it's got a good ring to it. So we're going to be talking about a few different topics today on the Big and Tall radio show here on Blog Talk. And if you're joining us live here, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And it's glad to have all of our listeners out there. The first thing I want to get into is the Alamo Bowl, which we're going to talk about. Could possibly want to be one of the best bowl games to ever be played, and especially one of the best comebacks. We're going to follow that up with Al Jazeera news reports, which have been basically blown up all throughout social media, and even it's gotten to news headlines about certain players in the NFL and the MLB who've been accused of taking performance-enhancing drugs. So stay tuned for that. And then we're going to follow it up with an NFL playoff look because the NFL season had just come to a conclusion, the regular season, that is. So we're going to talk about a little bit of NFL playoffs, and then we're going to round out the show with some Big Ten talk, the first week of conference play in basketball. So let's get right down to it. So the Valero Alamo Bowl, the 2016 Valero Alamo Bowl, was between TCU and Oregon. And if you did not watch this game, I feel bad for you, because if you're a college football fan and you did not watch this game, this was one of the best games I probably ever watched in college football. And I say that because TCU was overcoming a 31-0 deficit heading into halftime. People who watched the college football probably turned this one off after halftime, seeing 31-0 blowout. Then you quickly turn around, and less than 30 minutes later, it's a tie ball game, and we're going into overtime. So TCU ended up winning in three overtimes, and 47-41 was the final, and in dramatic fashion, too. So the first thing I want to ask you, Tom, is, was this one of the greatest bowl game comebacks in recent history, and was it one of the best bowl games you've ever seen?
It certainly was unexpected. I don't know that it will go down in history as one of the best, because to be honest with you, Oregon totally collapsed, and TCU, I would say that it's one of the best because of the comeback scenarios of it, and certainly of all the storylines that lay around the TCU quarterback and the aftermath with that. But I think what you saw, for whatever reason, was a collapse in the second half of the Oregon Ducks, and a you know, a shot in the arm, if you will, of TCU that was really able to mount a stunning rally. And it's certainly the largest comeback in college football history, obviously, with a 47-41 win in the triple overtime Saturday against Oregon in the Alamo Bowl. I would say yes, it would definitely go up there as one of the best ever. I think also, though, it brings up to a point that maybe we didn't have that many bowl games. Because, you know, we know that it's going to be Alabama and Clemson playing next week in the national championship. But one of the things after watching Ohio State just clobber Notre Dame and Stanford take care of business, we could easily make a case that Ohio State and Stanford could be in the national championship. So the thing about it is one of the reasons that made this such a good bowl game was not only comeback to win from TCU with all their storylines, but there just really wasn't that many good bowl games to pick from. And again, then that goes back to something we've talked about on the show. We need to have 8 teams instead of 4 teams.
Certainly agree with you. And we've had that conversation on Breaking Rank, too. And you can listen to Breaking Rank on Tuesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern time on Blog Talk at Indiana Talks Radio. And we break down all college sports. So we start in the fall and in the winter with college football. And then now we're going to transition to the show once the national championship is over into college basketball. But you're completely right. I think this has to be one of the best bowl games, at least for this year. You include the Pinstripe Bowl in that just because it was close, and that one went into overtime and had a lot of shock value for fans. But you look at all the other bowl games out there, a lot of them were blowouts, and it was really surprising to see Iowa lose in the fashion that they did, and same with Michigan State. It was kind of depressing on the Big Ten side. But continuing with the Alamo Bowl, I think what's impressive is the ability for Bram Kohlhausen, the backup QB for TCU, who less than 60 hours before the start of the game was told, "Hey kid, you're going to be our starting quarterback for this bowl game," because you know what, Trayvon Boykin, he was arrested. He was arrested on Thursday night in San Antonio for a fight and a scuffle that he had outside of a San Antonio bar, in which he was charged with assaulting a public servant, resisting arrest, and public intoxication. Like I said, just about 72 hours before kickoff in one of the biggest bowl games for TCU in recent history. So that impact right away, I think a lot of people took TCU completely out of the picture. When you lose a Heisman caliber quarterback like that, it's pretty tough to overcome. And when they relied on him so much during the season, and you saw the different type of team that they were when he had to sit out for a little bit with injuries, but he makes a huge difference. And I think for Bram Kohlhausen to do what he did in this bowl game and to bring this team back to life after being down 31-0 is completely impressive. So, Tom, what about Trayvon Boykin? Where is he going to go now as far as his Heisman caliber he had? And now with these arrests and everything else, does TCU stick with Bram Kohlhausen? And do they say, "Hey, you're going to be our starting quarterback next year since you won us a bowl game this year. And Trayvon Boykin, sorry, but you're going to have to transfer or sit on the bench"?
Well, Trayvon Boykin, put the nail in his own coffin. And, you know, to me, I don't feel sorry for the kid at all. And I know sometimes college kids make bad decisions and get into situations. But here's the thing. You just mentioned his impressive resume. And he decided that because he was at the Alamo Bowl, or whatever reason, that the rules did not apply to him. And then on top of that, it probably would not have been near as bad if he didn't assault a police officer. I think, 101 college courses should at least teach you not to hit a cop. I mean, I don't know, you're a senior at IU. I think that's a common sense class that people take for granted that you don't have to do. And I think that even if he had broken curfew, there may have been a decision not to start him, but he would have been able to come back into the game. But certainly with him being gone, you know, they weren't missed at the beginning. And so, you know, I think certainly he'll end up in the NFL. I mean, as we know, and that's a whole other subject for a whole other show, you don't have to be an altar boy to be in the NFL. So that's not going to keep him from being in the NFL, but it certainly is going to hurt his stock. And I think a lot of things, more than anything, it showed that he doesn't have the maturity to play in the NFL. And if I was an NFL general manager, a head coach, or owner, and I was going through on draft day and I was looking at people on Combine, and I'm having my interview at the Combine here in Indianapolis, one of the questions I'm just going to ask them is, What were you thinking? Why did you do that? What are some of the things that, and depending on his answers, if he gives me a snub, smart-ass answer, I'm going to scratch him off my list. Now, yes, there's going to be a team that picks him up, but I think, you know, it is going to hurt his draft stock. But and that's saying that he goes into the draft. I mean, there's a lot of variables. He's a junior. Is that's correct, right? He's a junior?
He's actually a senior. Yeah, okay. So he'll be entering the NFL draft.
I couldn't remember if he was a junior or if he was a senior. Okay, well, nonetheless, he's not going to be coming back to TCU. So, you know, certainly, you know, you would think that TCU and the Texas Christian Horned Frogs showed what kind of a team they really are by being in the bowl game, and then certainly showed what kind of a team that they can be when you have the next man up. And so, I think Trayvon Boykin has a lot of explaining to do to his future employer, whatever team in the NFL that'll be.
Completely agree with you. And you look like a guy like Johnny Manziel, who's had so many problems off the field, even stemming back to when he played at Texas A&M. And the Browns did take a chance on him, and you just see the reports now. He's had multiple problems in the NFL outside of the game itself. And so you wonder if that's going to happen with Trayvon Boykin or not, if he can clean up his act. And, I mean, you got other guys like that, too. Jameis Winston had off-the-field problems. But I hope he does clean up his act and learns from this incident. But it makes it really tough for a team to want to draft him and want to put all their money in and their future investment in him, because – you can't have things like this happen, especially in the NFL with the amount of problems that the NFL's had with players off the field. It's gotten to a point where there's another guy that can fill your role. Yeah, you may have the talent, but there's another guy in line that has a clean record and is going to fill that role and be able to do the job that you did, maybe even do it more successfully. So I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting to see where he ends up in the NFL draft. And like you said, in the combine, like, the interviews and stuff that these teams are going to have with him, I think missing a bowl game and a chance to help this team win, even though TCU did win, he did put them in a spot to be even in a bowl game chance and possibly in that college football ranking when they were playing throughout the season. But he did have a steady decline in the last, I would say, about 3 or 4 games where he wasn't playing up to his potential, and he did get hurt against Kansas and didn't play against Oklahoma in the second-to-last game. But still, that doesn't take away from anything he did in the beginning of the season. So it's going to be really interesting to see where he ends up. But to look at what Bram Coldhausen did, 28 for 40, 45, 351 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, and only 1 interception. And then he rushed the ball for 11 carries, 45 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So that's pretty impressive, and I think this kid is going to be very, very good for TCU in the future. And to come off a win like this one in a pretty big bowl game against Oregon, who in the past has been such a prestigious school when it comes to football, you had guys like Marcus Mariota come out of there, and when they were playing for a championship title and things like that. So I think this guy's got a job secure for him, and people are looking to him saying, wow, this kid's pretty impressive.
Well, certainly.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, certainly, you know, one of the things that, and I've talked about it with other people, and I was doing an interview with on the radio yesterday with myself and our co-host Rick Riggin, and you know, one of the things we talked about was Johnny quarterback and him coming back to Cleveland and that probably not being likely, but you do have that next man up scenario. So when you look at Boykin and you look at the fact that he screwed up, there's always going to be somebody vying for that job. And what a better stage to have your job interview than at the Alamo in one of the biggest, biggest comebacks in all of history that everybody's still talking about.
Right, completely agreed. To flip the other side of the coin here and look at the Oregon Ducks and what they were able to do, they had a 31-0 lead in this game. And to blow a game like this when you're up that many points, I understand your starting center – and possibly one of the best centers in all of football, Matt Hagerty, he got injured right around the second quarter, and so they were without him, but they still held a 31-0 lead. And Vernon Adams Jr. wasn't able to continue after he took a blow to the head and had to enter the locker room for evaluation for concussion protocol, and he ended up coming out in the third quarter in a hoodie. So he wasn't able to continue, but it brings it back to Jeff Lockie had the – backup quarterback Jeff Lockie, he had a really tough time with this Oregon, with this TCU defense and being able to control the Oregon offense too. And I think it maybe stems from the center too, because I watched this game and the center was so inconsistent in being able to snap the ball to Jeff Locke, and it wasn't so much Jeff Locke's fault. It was just the snaps weren't very good, and he wasn't able to get a handle on the ball, and he was worrying about whether he could catch the ball or not. And so Oregon stopped TCU in the first half with their defense. They forced five punts and a turnover on downs against TCU, and then it completely flipped sides. And TCU forced five, six punts against Oregon and had an interception or two to go with it. So I don't know. It was like watching two completely different games, and both teams wanted it so bad. But I don't know. What was your overall opinion about this game, too?
Well, honestly, I agree with exactly what you said. It was a tale of two halves or a tale of two different cities. What you had was a very domineering Oregon Duck team that was able to come out and take advantage of some of the gaps that were left there by Trayvon Boykin and situations that were going on beyond Texas TCU's challenges that they were having. They were able to capitalize on that. And here's the other thing. I think they relaxed, and they do something that you should never do no matter what your opponent is, and that's fall asleep. And they fell asleep on TCU and the Horned Frogs. And then on the other end of it, that's when TCU was able to capitalize on it. And the reason they fell asleep is because they felt comfortable with the league that they were at. They felt like they didn't have to execute and do some of the things that they did. So overall, it was a fantastic game. And if you certainly are one of those type of people to make a decision about a game in the first half or the first quarter and say, hey, this is going to be a blowout, or I'm not going to watch this game because Trayvon Boykin isn't playing, or I'm not going to watch this game because of an injury, then you would have been sadly disappointed in a game like this. So overall, I think it was a fantastic game, certainly a game you don't see all the time, and I don't think you ever see it in the history of college football.
Yeah, I completely agree, but you are listening to the Big and Tall radio show here, and I am your host, Jordan Malley, from WIUX 99.1 FM Bloomington Pure Student Radio, and also the Balance Radio Network. And I'm joined alongside my special co-host for tonight, Tom Marquez, El Presidente. He is basically the go-to guy when it comes to the Balance. He's the host of the Balance radio show that airs from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern time on Blog Talk Radio and Indiana Talks, also on Breaking Rank, too. So you can follow me at JMalleyWIUX on Twitter, and you can follow Tom at Thomas Mark, M-A-R-Q, if you want to. Look for the most up-to-date sports, some humor, and whatever else might interest you as part of our social media push. But we're going to switch topics here, and we're going to go to something that I've been really itching to talk about, and that's all of these reports from Al Jazeera News, who came out about a week and a half ago to talk about an investigation that they did that stems all the way back to 2011, where they have named multiple players in Major League Baseball and the National Football League for using performance-enhancing drugs, whether it was HGH or Delta 2. And so they released a video about 42 minutes long, a documentary insider about players in professional sports who've taken performance-enhancing drugs, and people don't know about most of these athletes. But I'm going to name off the list that they gave to the public. And the first one, and the first and most important one, is Peyton Manning. And he was accused of taking HGH while he was recovering from a neck injury in 2011. And to follow that list is Clay Matthews from the Green Bay Packers, Mike Neal from the Packers, Julius Peppers when he was on the Bears, James Harrison from the Steelers, tight end Dustin Keller, who's currently a free agent. And then in baseball, we have Ryan Howard from the Phillies, Ryan Zimmerman from the Nationals, and longtime journeyman Taylor Teagarden, the catcher for who played on the Cubs for an extended period of time in 2015. So the first thing I want to say about this whole entire report is they had a guy named Charles Sly, and if there's any indication by just his name alone, he went out basically did undercover investigating for multiple different organizations that were helping train and aid athletes with injuries and other things like that. He was a former bobsledder and a former Olympic hurdler. So he's got a pretty interesting background. And so I guess my first question to you, Tom, is do you think Peyton Manning actually did take HGH for him to come back from the injuries he had with the Colts and then move on and go to the Broncos in 2012? I would certainly hope not, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we certainly do what we should not do a lot of times with our athletes that we put up on a pedestal, is that Peyton Manning could never do any wrong. And there are people that say Tom Brady could never do any wrong. There are people that would say back that are big Cardinal fans like myself that that would never happen with Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa. That would never happen with my favorite player, insert name here. We got to be very careful about the fact that they're human. And here's the thing. What I would say, and I think you and my co-host, that one radio guy, Rick Riggin, on The Balance, were first to say, oh, this is a bunch of crap. You can't believe everything you read on the Internet. And I'm very, very cautious about that. But there was a lot of sources to that story. But then it began to fall apart. So what my first initial thing was, well, here's another steroid issue. There's going to be an investigation. We'll figure out what happened, and we'll just kind of follow the investigation wherever that may lead. And that is kind of how it's come back around now because, you know, as disappointing as it is to say, you know, you've got Peyton Manning, one of the oldest quarterbacks in the NFL, certainly one of the most accomplished first-round Hall of Famer if all of these allegations have proved to be false. Certainly, I think that would hurt or tarnish his first-round ballotness with the Hall of Fame. But there's a long ways to go before that decision, before we would ever even get into that conversation. There's obviously living here in Indianapolis, being a diehard Colts fan and loving Peyton Manning. I follow his career very, very intensely, even when, you know, with the Denver Broncos. And, you know, the story was over the weekend that he's the backup quarterback. Well, the reason he was the backup quarterback is because he's been suffering from injuries. And that was really one of the biggest reasons that Jim Irsay said, hey, we need to go ahead and make a change and move forward with Andrew Luck, whether you liked it or not at the time. And he did well over at Denver. The thing about it is he's suffering from some injuries. And there are drugs out there that help you do that. Now, why that particular drug that they're talking about is on the banned list, I don't know. Have no idea. I can tell you one thing, a lot of thing about it, because, you know, we talk a lot about baseball and follow steroids and stuff, a lot, that story. Here's the thing. It doesn't make you any better of a player. You know, I would suck as an NFL quarterback, and if I took steroids, I would still suck as an NFL quarterback. What it does do is a quarterback like Peyton Manning who gets hurt, who gets injured, who needs to have that bounce back, it gives them that accelerated bounce back so they can get back into the game. So to say that I believe it might be a stretch, but to say that I'm giving it some thought that there might be some, you know, the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. And, you know, there very well might be a little bit of smoke there. There very well might be. So I would reserve judgment in saying whether I believe or don't believe. But one of the things I will say is that the smoke is starting to clear, and there's still a little fire around.
Yeah, and I mean, these reports keep coming out about different sources that keep connecting it and confirming that, in fact, Peyton Manning did take HGH in order to recover from that injury he had with his neck. And I know that neck injury was a pretty substantial injury. I know it's runs in his family, too, and so I think it was actually stopped his brother from playing football, too, not Eli, but the less famous brother of the Manning brothers. But to break this whole entire scenario down, it's pretty weird that they would come out with a report from somebody that was an inside, quote unquote, inside investigator, and from a news source that is not really followed in the United States. If you look at Al Jazeera News, they're more of a European and Middle Eastern origin of news reporting, and so you don't see a lot of news come out in the United States from them. But things that throw red flags for me is, first of all, this guy that went undercover and reported. He's had a laundry list of negatives against him, and one being the most critical, and that he was a part of a mortgage scam worth over $5 million with another partner in the UK back, stems back about 5 years ago or so. He had to file for bankruptcy and was no longer allowed to own a business in the UK as of 2011. So he stopped doing whatever he was doing that was illegal. Basically, in 2011, became an intern or assistant pharmacist to a guy named Dr. Dale Geyer. And Dr. Dale Geyer is one of the lead practitioners and the lead pharmacists at the anti-aging clinic in Indianapolis. And so he first came out and confirmed the source that, yes, Peyton Manning did, in fact, take HGH while he was here, but then later recanted his statements, and same with Charles Sly. He even came out with a YouTube video that you can go watch, and he recanted everything that he said and reported for Al Jazeera News. So to me, if I was Peyton Manning, and whether or not we still don't know if he did take HGH or not, if he ended up not taking steroids, I would be so frustrated with this situation, because it's basically slandering and defamation of character. And you look at Peyton Manning's whole entire career, and it's been nothing but a highlight, and it's been nothing but a class act player. And you look at somebody in the NFL like Peyton Manning, he is one of the best to do it in a very, very long time. And if I was to pick somebody out in any sport, I'd pick Derek Jeter from baseball, just because he has such a clean record and he's such a standout guy. And you look at the NFL, I would pick Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning, it seems like the guy could do no wrong. So I don't know. That's a lot of red flags for me. Another one being in playing devil's advocate, say Peyton Manning did. Here's a red flag that throws at me. So if he did take HGH in 2011, like they're saying, he recovered from the injury in 2011, came back in 2012, had a decent season with Denver. And then when he's age 37, throws for 55 touchdowns and 5,477 yards, just barely two seasons after he had been recovering from this injury. So I don't know how fast it takes for steroids to impact your body and what they can do, but Peyton Manning is a very mental quarterback, and so he's got those skills. And I think the steroids would only enhance what he was doing. So I don't know. This whole entire situation is very, very weird to me. It's even more obscure that the guys that reported this and confirmed it are now recanting their statements. But I want to read something real quick, and I'm going to get back to you, Tom. Peyton Manning released a statement on December 26, right after Christmas, saying the allegations that I would do something like that is completely garbage and is totally made up. It never happened, never. I really can't believe somebody would put something like this on the air. Whoever said this is making stuff up. And then the Denver Broncos went to his side and said, knowing Peyton Manning and everything he stands for, the Denver Broncos support him 100%. These are false claims made by Al Jazeera, and we do not believe the report. Peyton Manning is rightfully outraged by the allegations, which he emphatically denied to our organization, and which have been publicly renounced by the source who initially proved them. So there's just a lot of toss-up between this and all the other guys that were named. Even the MLB laughed at it, said this was a complete joke. There's no credibility to any of these sources that say that they took steroids. They took Delta 2, which helps is a steroidal in nature, a hormonal drug that you can use, obviously banned from baseball. And the NFL had banned HGH from use from players in 2011, but didn't start testing till 2014. So that throws another red flag for me too. So in the case that Peyton Manning did take steroids, what impact does this have on his entire career as a whole? What would you look at him as?
I mean, as the aspect of, you're right, when he did take it, it was not on the NFL ban list. So at the time, he wasn't breaking any rules. So we could look for that loophole. But you mentioned it as well. Peyton Manning is a very smart quarterback, very smart person. Of course, he's going to say he didn't do this. I mean, look at what Tom Brady said. I didn't deflate those balls. But anybody that says that they is accused publicly, and they're a public figure like that, or they're accused of using human growth hormones, HGH, or whatever steroid it might be, the knee-jerk response is, I didn't do it. And then as they gather their team around them, they begin to do some damage control. And, you know, one of the things that I would say is I wouldn't say a red flag, but one of the things that would make me pause and think, is this story true? Peyton Manning went out and spent an enormous amount of money. I don't know what the amount was, but I know that it's going to be enormous because of who he hired. He hired Artie Fletcher, who used to be the communications director for George W. Bush. So he was giving the PR press conferences for the president of the United States. That is, once that's on your resume, you can charge whatever you want, and people are only going to ask you for their help if they really feel like something's needed. Why would Peyton Manning hire that person above all people, who's very, very well known public service and in you know, what we call reputation protection in the business, meaning they hired him to protect his reputation? Why did it need to be protected? I don't know. Maybe he didn't do anything wrong. Maybe he was just being forethinking in it. But that made me pause to think. But now that we have a second source, now what do we look at? Is this a source that's legit, like Deep Throat and Nixon? Or is this a source, another source, like the original source that really amounts to nothing? So, again, I think that what has to happen here is, just like with Deflategate, not near on the same level, but certainly got the investigation. So I think certainly the NFL has to do an investigation. And where that investigation leads, that's where it leads. And I'll be the first one to step up and say, hey, that's Peyton Manning, not him. Anybody but him. Say it ain't true, Peyton. Say it ain't true. We're going to believe you. But when there's mounting evidence that shows otherwise, just like in the cases that we saw with Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and many others in the baseball steroid sting when it all came out, when there's that many names that are being dropped, there's smoke. And when there's smoke, I keep going back to there's fire. So, you know, it's an ongoing story. The story is obviously not going to go away. And because it belongs to our beloved Peyton Manning, and no one is even talking about the other players that were mentioned, and they weren't just football players. So you'd have to pull out the list to even know what they were. So the story's attached itself to Peyton Manning, and unfortunately it's not going to go away. We've got to see where it goes.
Yeah, and you talk about the other players that were involved in this, and one being James Harrison, who's been an outspoken player in the NFL, and he talked about how a few months ago, I believe, he gave back participation trophies that his kids received because he didn't believe that they deserved it. So he's a very well outspoken guy. And I'm going to read a quote from him. When somebody asked him about these recent reports, he said, I've never been supplied with anything. I never took steroids, point blank, period, end of discussion. And then he said, when he was asked why his name would have came up in that report, he says, I don't know, man. I got it. They want to claim it. I guess it's just easy. Y'all want to chew on it. Y'all want to believe it. You know, James Harrison is strong because he's taking something. Heck no, James Harrison is strong because he worked at it. And so, I don't know, a lot of these guys are very, very, I guess, outraged at this claim that they would even be involved in this. And I don't know, it's so up in the air because of these reports of these guys recanting their statements. And when you say something public like this and you publish something that's nationwide and that's worldwide for people to see, and it becomes a story like this, and you're attacking guys that are very reputable in sports, like somebody like Peyton Manning, James Harrison, Clay Matthews, guys in the MLB who were once stars, Ryan Howard, Ryan Zimmerman, who are still productive players. So I don't know. It just throws a lot of red flags, a lot of scratching my head. So I would tell listeners, if you're going to follow this story, follow it very closely. Don't read too much into it because there's a lot of different aspects to this story where it could get mixed up, and your thoughts and your way of thinking about these players is going to be completely altered just because of something that these guys had said, and now we're recanting and saying that they didn't believe it and it was made up and all this other stuff. So it'll be an interesting topic to keep an eye on. But the amount of players and the type of players that were named were just really, really obscure to me. I mean, Ryan Howard, Ryan Zimmerman, guys in the MLB, it's just weird. And baseball takes a lot more, gives a lot more penalty for steroids than the NFL does, and for using human growth hormones. And I mean, you look, it was only banned in 2011 and only started testing in 2014. So the NFL had kind of overlooked players taking steroids in the past, and the MLB is completely different. You get suspended the first time you're caught with it, you get suspended for 50 games. The second time you get caught using it, you get suspended for a full season, and the third time you are banned for life. So I don't know. It'll be a good story to keep tabs on as it keeps going on, and I hope these players, I hope this is wrong. I hope that Peyton Manning didn't take steroids just because he's such a good guy. And what he's done for the NFL has been amazing. What he did for the Colts, winning them a Super Bowl, was pretty fantastic on top of that. So, but we're going to switch topics once again. We're going to go from the Al Jazeera report that we so desperately wanted to talk about and didn't get a chance to. And you're probably wondering why we're not talking about any of the college football playoffs. Those two games that were played on Saturday. Well, we're not talking about that because we have another show tomorrow night, and you can tune in for all of that action on Breaking Rank from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time over on Indiana Talks and Blog Talk Radio. You'll be able to stream that, and that's with our beloved other co-host, Rick Riggin, who does a fantastic job, along with Mo from the BS Sports Show and the Essential Matt Polling. So you want to tune into that. But the NFL season just came to a conclusion last night with that Vikings and Packers game, which was a pretty good game to watch. I mean, they were playing for a division spot to basically take over the NFL, the NFC North, and the Vikings ended up winning 20-13. And so now they're going to be hosting the Seattle Seahawks on Saturday, I believe it is. And honestly, if I was the Vikings, I would not have wanted to win that game last night. Yeah, you win the division, but now you got to go and play Seattle. And so my first look at this is, wow, a Vikings team that's carried by Teddy Bridgewater is going to have to go up against that Seattle Seahawks defense. That's going to be pretty horrible for the Vikings. I mean, that Seahawks defense is so good, and they only keep getting better because they bring back all the guys that were injured, and now they're pretty much healthy now. And so anytime you got a guy like Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, any of these guys that are on their defensive side, it's going to be awfully tough for this Vikings team to overcome a win. What do you think the ultimate outcome is going to be in this first wild card or this first first wild card matchup, as I would like to call it?
Well, that's the NFC wild card game, and that's obviously on Sunday. Saturday is the AFC wild card game.
Ah, okay.
And the Kansas City Chiefs, who have just been on a winning streak against the Houston Texans, and we know that they were a part, at least instrumental, in what happened with the Indianapolis Colts. We're not used to talking about somebody else being the AFC champions, but they play Saturday 4:35 on ESPN. And then over on Saturday night, over on CBS, is the Steelers and the Bengals. And then we go to that game. But certainly with Saturday's games, Kansas City, I'm rooting for all along. I hope that Houston doesn't get to the Super Bowl for a lot of reasons. But I like the Kansas City Chiefs. They went on in, like, I believe a 9-game winning streak. And you know the thing about the Pittsburgh Steelers, they also kind of snuck in there, and with the Cincinnati Bengals and Dalton, and what a great season Dalton was having. And you know, I personally had Dalton as a backup to Andrew Luck, and they both went down in fantasy football, so it wasn't the best of situations. But certainly Andrew Dalton, or Howdy Doody, as I like to call him. You probably don't remember who Howdy Doody is there, Jordan, but I like to call him. And Big Ben Roethlisberger, you never can rule him out. And, of course, the other really good NFC wildcard game is going to be the Redskins and the Green Bay Packers. I mean, who would have ever thought that Kirk Cousins could have came in there and done what he's done with the Washington Redskins? What a debacle that team was. And, you know, he's kind of a cocky, arrogant word that I won't use. But, you know, hey, he's earned the right to be that way. And then, you know, certainly we got more games coming up on the 16th, the 17th, and the 24th, all gearing up for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think you go back, and I talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. The last time they've lost was Sunday, October 18th. They have won 9 straight games. It's unreal. 10 straight games. I am sorry. 10 straight games to go to 11-5 to end the season. And you know what? That was only one game worse than the Denver Broncos, and they could have stole that. They could have stole that, basically that division, if you look at it. And so I don't know, to lose your number one running back like the Kansas City Chiefs did in Jamaal Charles, and Jamaal Charles going into that game where he was ended up injured against the Bears, he was one of the best running backs in the NFL. So to take a blow like that and then come back and resurge and win 10 games in a row is just is something to marvel in the NFL, especially. That's such a difficult feat to accomplish. And you look at the Carolina Panthers, who also went on that tremendous winning streak and almost went undefeated in the entire regular season. So I agree with you. I think I like the Kansas City Chiefs in the game against the Houston Texans. So I'm going to take the Chiefs in that game. And then you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. This is a very, very good matchup, and I love this matchup because this should technically be a second-round game, essentially. You look at the Steelers, they have one of the best offenses in the NFL. You got Antonio Brown, who's definitely the best wide receiver in the NFL. And you got Ben Roethlisberger, who's arguably a top-five quarterback in the NFL. So that's going to be a game to watch. Honestly, I'm probably going to take the Steelers just because of their offense. Nothing to take away from the Bengals because they do have an explosive offense, too, with A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert. And they've got a running back duo in Jeremy Hill. And the other running back, Giovanni Bernard, is the other running back. So they got a very good offense. And their defense is pretty good, too, but it's going to be a high-scoring game, I think, there. And then when you look at the NFC wildcard games, the Vikings are going to have a really tough time against the Seahawks team. I don't care if the Vikings have home field advantage or not. The Seahawks just went into Arizona this past week and pounded the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are one of the best teams in football. So that, to me, is very bad for the Vikings. And the Green Bay Packers, even though they did lose the game last night, they're probably grinning a little bit because they get to go to Washington to play the Redskins, who are 9-7. And yeah, the Redskins have had a little bit of a positive turn to their season. And you look at Kirk Cousins, who's been amazing for them. And their motto for the whole entire season has been based off of Kirk Cousins. He came out of that one game and looked at a reporter as he was walking in the locker room and go, "You like that?" And so I thought that was pretty funny. That's been their whole motto every single time that they've won a game. It's, "You like that?"
Yeah, and that came from the arrogance that I was talking about earlier at the very beginning. Here's the thing. The Redskins have something that's very, very dangerous when it comes to the NFL, especially during playoff time, and that's called momentum. And the Packers are used to this playoff scenario, obviously, with Aaron Rodgers, Eddie Lacy, James Starks, and James Jones, Randall Cobb, Richard Rodgers, and Devontae Adams. Certainly all of those are a good handful of people to have. And the thing about the Washington Redskins, they've had to kind of assemble a hodgepodge of players. You know, even looking at – talking about Kirk Cousins coming up, and again, who would have thought that he would have been able to do – that whole team was a train wreck and a trash can fire, if you will. And, you know, Alfred Morris, Matt Jones, Jordan Reed, Pierre Garçon, former Colt, and James Crowder and DeSean Jackson, kind of a hodgepodge of characters, if you will, a tale of comedies, if you will. So I think that they have a lot of momentum, and they have a lot of reasons to be confident. I think what happens a lot of times when this happens with unexperienced teams and unexperienced quarterbacks, they get eaten by the Venus flytrap, if you will. And Aaron Rodgers is obviously an MVP Hall of Famer quarterback, and you look at Eddie Lacy as well. They can just sit back and wait. And when the flytrap is open, the Washington Redskins will think that it's open, and they'll get gobbled up by the Green Bay Packers. However, they are at home, I believe, and the Washington Redskins have played very, very well at home. So one of the things I would say is that if they could, as we used to say, the military, stay alert, stay alive. If they can do that part, just a small part like that, and stay alert to the defense and really be able to control the turnovers, especially the turnovers, because Green Bay's defense loves to push turnovers. If they can do that, I think Washington Redskins come out a winner and smelling good in this first round. I don't look for them to go very far, but it certainly is a good feel-good story, especially if you're in the city of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And this NFL playoffs is going to be really awesome. I'm rooting for the Carolina Panthers just because of the things that Cam Newton has done this season. It's been fantastic to watch. But we got about 15 minutes left on the show here. You are listening to the Big and Tall Radio Show with your host, Jordan Malley. You can go follow me on Twitter at jmalleywiux. And I'm joined by El Presidente of The Balance, Tom Marquez. And so we're just breaking down a couple different topics here that's been on our mind for a couple different days. And so we're going to switch over to the last one, and we're going to talk about this for about 15 minutes before we have to conclude the show. And that's the first week of Big Ten basketball. And I love talking about Big Ten basketball more so because I go to Indiana. I follow Big Ten basketball all the time, every Big Ten sport, even concluding with football. So it's nice to switch over and focus my attention on Big Ten basketball instead of having to flip-flop between IU football and IU basketball. So now the first thing I want to talk about with this division, this conference, is the impressive week Iowa had. Iowa beat number one Michigan State 83-70. I know that Denzel Valentine did not play. That's a huge factor. He's up there for Player of the Year throughout the whole entire Division One basketball, and then he could even be Conference Player of the Year. And I think he's pushing his level with Conference Player of the Year, and he's definitely the favorite. Him and Melo Tremble will probably compete for that. But very impressive first win for Iowa, who's unranked, and then they go to on the road again. And they beat number 14, Purdue. They beat them 70-63. And these were my top two teams in the Big Ten when I wrote the recap a few days ago about the whole entire Big Ten and where I saw them slotted. The first thing that I said about Iowa specifically is their season is going to be come down to these first 2 weeks because they still got to play Purdue again, and I believe they have to play Wisconsin. So their first 2 weeks was basically – ranked team, unranked team, and then ranked team. And basically the two best teams in the Big Ten Conference. So, Tom, have you been able to watch this Iowa team play at all? Because they are absolutely fantastic.
Well, yeah, I have it. And, you know, there must be something in the water up there in, I don't know, are they in Cedar Rapids or Iowa City? One of the two.
Iowa City.
Yeah, there must be something in the water there in Iowa City because, yeah, the Iowa Hawkeyes, obviously a former team of Steve Alford, who now is out at UCLA, and we know him well from Indiana here. But Iowa did a lot of interesting things. And we're to that point in the season, and you mentioned going into the Big Ten season, we're to that point in the season where the men are separated from the boys. And it's real easy to say, okay, I'm having a great season when you're playing whoever. But when you have to go against some and the same thing can be said about IU in the Big Ten. And, you know, certainly we look at how well Purdue's going to be doing, and you look at where the Big Ten standing conferences are and the power rankings. I mean, I think Michigan State even fell down to, what, number 14 or something like that, and Minnesota number 13 in the power rankings. But, you know, overall, you got to look at teams like Wisconsin, Maryland, Michigan State. Maybe they didn't fall that far down on the power rankings, but I think that they're ranked further above Iowa, and certainly so is Purdue. But you got to look at where Indiana's at. We could talk about them for a second as well if you want, since you go to IU. I'm an IU alumni, and, you know, we always want to talk about IU this time of year because is this going to be Tom Crean's last year? We don't know, but certainly he's on the hot seat, that's for sure. And so we'll see where that all comes together in Rutgers, obviously, at 10-22. But when you get into the Big Ten season is really what I think separates you from the herd. Are you for real? Are you going to play in March? Do you have what it takes to play teams like Kentucky or whoever you may be seeded against in March? Are you going to be able to play against teams like Kansas? Are you going to be able to play against teams like Duke? So the Big Ten, I think, really separates a lot of that, and that's going to be the big test for Iowa. But there again, you know, they're at 22-12, so it's certainly, you know, in the conference, I think they're 12-6. So certainly, when you look at them playing all Big Ten teams and really start racking up the stairs, if you will, to March, that's when you see the big difference. But I'm really impressed with the Iowa Hawkeyes, and I certainly think that they have the gas to go into March. Now, how far into March, that story's still being told.
Yeah, and Iowa actually jumped the rankings. They went from unranked a week ago prior to now the number 19 team in the country, which is pretty impressive. And Purdue falls from being ranked number 8 originally, then they dropped down to number 14, and now they're down to number 20 because they already suffered a loss and they suffered to unranked Iowa. And Michigan State drops from the number 1 team in the country to number 5. Maryland stays at where they are. They dropped one ranking to number 3, which isn't a huge deal, but they're still undefeated in the Big Ten conference. So I think this Iowa team is very, very much to keep an eye on because they're going to be a tough opponent, especially when they go up against the two out of the best three teams in the Big Ten, and they beat them on the road. And that's the hardest thing to do in college basketball is to go on the road to another school and beat them on the road. And that's the same thing with any sport, too. But I think it's essential in college basketball when you're playing a team at home, and they're very good teams like Purdue and like Michigan State. So they're a team to keep an eye on. Another team to look at is, in fact, the school that I go to is Indiana. Indiana's on a 7-game winning streak. They're 8-0 at home, and they've only lost one road game, and the other two games that they lost were in a neutral zone in Maui, and which was the disastrous trip for Maui that everybody knows if you followed IU basketball at all. So I think Indiana has been very impressive. Yeah, that they haven't played anybody really that great in the Big Ten wise. I mean, they played Rutgers an away game at Rutgers. They won 79-72, and that's not a very impressive win just because Rutgers isn't very good at basketball. And then they went on the road and went and beat Nebraska 79-69. So most people that would watch IU basketball would say, yeah, you won two games in the Big Ten conference, but you played like the two out of the bottom five teams. Okay, that's fine. That's fair to say. But I think the one impressive thing is to look at Yogi Ferrell. Yogi Ferrell is completely turned around this team, and he's taken that leadership role to the next level. And I think Thomas Bryant has even improved from when we were talking about him less than a month ago, and I was complaining that he had no experience, that he looked like he was lost at times out there. And I think Tom Crean has really worked with them, and they've limited the turnovers in the games that they play, and it's been really nice to watch. It hasn't been so much a pickup game than it was back prior in November. It's more of a constructed team, and Indiana has an explosive offense, and their offense is what they lean on the most. And so they're really going to need guys like James Blackman Jr., Yogi Ferrell to keep on doing what he does. Troy Williams especially. Troy Williams is the X factor on this team. I said it about a month ago, and I'm going to say it again because I still believe it. He reminds me so much of Victor Oladipo. He has a little bit more size than Victor Oladipo does. Doesn't have the handles like Victor did, but two completely similar players. Now, do I believe that Troy Williams is going to be a lottery pick like Victor Oladipo was? No, not at all. Troy Williams is going to be a NBA pick, but he's certainly not going to be a lottery pick, but they do have the same similar style. So I guess, Tom, what's a team that's coming up in the next few weeks? What's a team to look at Indiana has to play that could basically boost their record? I mean, they play Wisconsin, Ohio State, Minnesota, and Illinois in the next 2 weeks. Which one of those teams do you think is Indiana's going to struggle the most against?
Well, you mentioned some good points about Yogi Ferrell. And the thing, I've been disappointed with Yogi Ferrell's quasi-leadership, almost to the aspect of him knowing that he's going to be in the NBA. I don't have to be the leader that I was before. But I think he's coming around a little bit. Certainly he's off to a sizzling start. I mean, in the conference play, averaging about 22 points and 7 assists. Now, I think the team that I would be most worried about right now with IU is Wisconsin. And Nigel Hayes, continues to be the focus point of all defenses, for that matter. He averages 12.5 points and 8 rebounds, and is only shooting 38% in conference play. So the thing about it is he's a very, very good player, and he can get hot and he can get looks. And when he does that, he's one of their key components with Wisconsin, because a lot of people think, well, Nigel Hayes is a great defender. but he's not such a good shooter unless he's from the charity line. But the thing about it is, he is such a good defender. He's going to force that charity line mark, and he's going to get that rebound, and his assists are out of this world. So if I was to sit back and be worried about a team right now, I'd be worried about a lot of teams in the Big Ten right now. And you mentioned one of them, Iowa, a while ago, and certainly Michigan State. I certainly would be worried about Purdue. There's a lot of teams I'd be worried about in the Big Ten. But if you're talking about right now, in the immediate near future, Nigel Hayes in Wisconsin, I think, can do a lot of damage to IU.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Even though they lost their head coach, Bo Ryan, and he decided to retire just about a month ago as well.
Which is I'm so sorry. I didn't interrupt you. I can only do that on my show, not your show. No, the only thing I would say is that's another reason to look at Wisconsin as being legendary. I'm glad you brought that up, because Bo Ryan, you know, just said quits. Hey, I'm done, and that's a far cry from they're a far cry from the team that they were last year, obviously in the Final Four and the March Madness and so forth, and certainly the team that brought down Kentucky. They're a far cry from that, but I don't know really why he retired. But he was loved by those players. He's loved by those fans. And when you add that emotional attachment to a particular game, to a particular season, Wisconsin Badgers have that this year.
Yeah, I just remember, I want to say it was a year or two ago, I was up at Purdue and bus, and they were parked at a local hotel, and the players were getting off the bus, and I saw him. He was greeting fans and everything, being really nice. So, yeah, I agree completely with you. I think that's going to be a big factor for Wisconsin. They're probably playing their season for him, too. And I could still see them sneaking into a playoff spot, a tournament spot. So Indiana got lucky here. I think that their schedule is completely backloaded, and you look at their last 5 to 7 games. They have to play Iowa twice. They got to play Michigan State, and they have to play Purdue, and then they have to play Maryland twice. So that's going to be very, very tough for IU at the end. So I actually kind of like it, though, because they're able to build their momentum up here in the next few weeks. If they can beat Ohio State at home on Sunday, if they could pull off a win tomorrow night against Wisconsin at home, and they are undefeated at home too. So, and it is very, very complicated and very difficult to play at Assembly Hall. If you've ever been to Assembly Hall before, for any of our fans out there listening, it gets extremely loud, crazy, uproaring fans in there, and Indiana has one of the best fan bases for basketball I've ever seen. It just goes back to the tradition that Indiana holds. So it's very tough for teams to go into Assembly Hall and pull out a win against IU, no matter what team that they have out there on the floor, especially this talented of an IU team. So they're going to be another team to look at. I hope they sneak into a potential spot. They need to pull off a couple crucial wins. And it's probably going to come later in the conference play, when they have to play teams like Iowa and Purdue and Maryland and those and such before the Big Ten tournament. But the last team I want to talk about, we only got about 3 minutes left here on the show, so I want to talk about a team that is about 2 hours north of Bloomington, Indiana, and that is the Purdue Boilermakers, who I honestly thought was probably the best team in the Big Ten besides Michigan State, just because of the size that they have with Caleb Swanigan and A.J. Hammond and Isaiah Haas. You got three guys that are over 7'10" to be able to command down low, and that's a very valuable asset for Purdue. So it was very shocking for me to see Iowa go into West Lafayette and pull out a win there. So I think this is going to be a turning point for Purdue's team, because they just lost to a ranked team in Butler just a few weeks back, and now that they lose at home against Iowa, that's two crucial losses that they have, and so they're slipping in the rankings a little bit, but I see them beating Michigan, Illinois, and Penn State, and Rutgers, who are their next following four games. Where do you see Purdue ending up in this Big Ten Conference, Tom?
Well, and I know you got about 90 seconds left on your show here, so I will try to make this quick. You know, and here's the thing with Purdue, A.J. Hammond, everything lies with him and his ability to handle the ball. And certainly Jared Ottuff, I'm sorry, of Iowa, is another lethal weapon in the Big Ten. I think as long as A.J. Hammond can control the tempo of the game, it's going to be very difficult for any team to beat Purdue. I think he's a key element in the Big Ten. I don't know that they have a Big Ten championship in store for them, but certainly they're going to be someone to contend with.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting to see the Big Ten play here in the next few weeks and even getting down to conference play. But that's going to about do it here on the Big and Tall Radio Show. I want to thank Tom Marquez for hanging out with me tonight for a one-hour show. It was filled with a lot of interesting stories. So if you caught us late here on Blog Talk Radio, you can go ahead and download it on iTunes shortly after this show. I am your host, Jordan Malley, and that's going to do it for us tonight here. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at jmalleywiux, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at thomasmarq. And if you want to go give The Balance a like too, we're both part of the Balance Radio Network, and so we'd love to have you as a follower on social media. But that's going to do it here. I am Jordan Malley. I am out, signing off.